Welcome to They'll Be Fine.
We're your hosts, Kim Heckman,
Trinette Attree,
and Lisa Pagano.
You've probably heard it before. They're smart. They're gifted. They'll be fine. But what if that's not always true?
In this podcast, we'll explore the surprising struggles that many gifted students face that lead to underachievement, as well as discuss practical strategies to help these brilliant minds reach their full potential.
Because they deserve better than just being fine. Let's give them what they really need to thrive and succeed.
In this episode, Anne Mary Thomas, a senior at Green Level High School, shares her inspiring journey as a passionate advocate for gifted education. She discusses her involvement with the Wake County Advanced Learning Services team and her roles as a volunteer and speaker at school board meetings. Anne Mary details her project on gifted education identification practices and her efforts to foster student advocacy. Additionally, she introduces Yapa Kids, a nonprofit organization she has been involved with, which provides online lessons to inspire academic curiosity to students worldwide. Anne Mary emphasizes the importance of student voice in educational discussions and shares her vision for the future of Yapa Kids as she transitions to college.
Can we get started by you just sharing a little bit about yourself with our audience?
Of course. Thank you so much for having me on. So my name is Anne Mary Thomas. I am a senior at Green Level High School in Wake County. And a few of my hobbies, I love to sing, I love to dance, and I love to read. And I'm really, really passionate about gifted education and educating the youth. It's something that's really close to my heart, and that is one of the reasons why I've volunteered at Yapa Kids. I work with Chris Rice and the amazing Advanced Learning Services team at Wake County.
It's awesome. So our president of NCAGT, Chris Rice, actually recommended that we reach out to you. He said, you are an amazing ambassador for gifted education, and you've spoken at your school board meetings before about the importance of gifted ed. Can you tell us a little bit about your experiences with gifted education and what made you become such a fierce advocate?
Yeah, of course. I started getting really involved in gifted education with it started off with a conversation with my AP English language teacher. I took AP Lang, as we call it at our school, my junior year, first semester. And in our AP Lang classes, instead of having a final exam, we have a final project. It's like a semester long project. You're supposed to choose a topic that you really, really like or something you're really interested in and just complete a project, interview people, talk to people. And at the end, you're supposed to make some sort of product out of it. And so that always confused me. I was like, should I make a documentary? Should I make a little video? And honestly, my video editing skills are not that good. So I ended up wanting to write a few pieces about a topic that I was interested in. But after I figured out that I wanted to write, I realized that there wasn't a specific topic that I was super honed in on. So after talking to my English teacher for a bit, we came across the topic of equity in education. And when I was talking about that with him, I briefly mentioned the AIG program because my brother had recently been identified as gifted for AIG math. That was just on my mind. I decided to do a project on AIG. I didn't know too much about it because I grew up in California, so I was not part of the AIG program. I was gifted. I was identified as gifted, but not in the AIG program. So this was like a completely new experience for me. I didn't know what AIG was, how they did it out here in North Carolina, what the standards were. So honestly, for me, it was just like a big learning and discovery type thing. And so I ended up interviewing 4 to 5 gifted educated coordinators in my district. And then I interviewed a lot of my peers and my classmates. And after doing that, I thought the program was super interesting, and I thought there was a lot of great things about it, but there's also a few things that I thought were really important to highlight. Like for me, especially, it was the identification practices. So I am not the best with tests. It's never really been my thing. And so I started thinking, I'm like, what are alternative ways that students can be identified and how effective are they? And so as I started to look more into that, I started to reach out to people. Even after my project was completed, after I got in my grade and everything, I still started to wonder and be curious about it. So I ended up contacting the head of academics in Wake County. And I was like, hey, this has been on my mind. And I I really want to talk about it and I want to do something about it, but I'm not really sure where to get started. And so I was able to work with the Advanced Learning Services team, and now I've been able to speak at school board meetings. I've been able to help them out with the LEAD program and College Connect, like advertising that to high schoolers and just talking to them about AIG in Wake County. So that's been a really great experience for me to share my thoughts and my opinions about gifted education as a high schooler. But as I started to do that, I also realized that there's a large gap in gifted education because students on, like, there aren't a lot of students that are advocating for gifted education and their opinions about it. Because whenever I would step into a new room about gifted education and talk to people about it, it seemed like I was, they'd be like, oh, you're the first student to ever come up to me and talk to me about this. Or they'd be like, oh, I've never had a high schooler be interested in this. And I'm like, I'm sure there are high schoolers interested in this, but it's just not something that's talked about enough for people to go out and actually make a change and do something about it. So I started to really focus on increasing high school gifted education advocacy. And so after I got to meet with the president and president-elect of the NAGC, the National Gifted Association, and after talking to them, they had actually met with three students in Colorado who started the NGTSAB, which is the National Gifted and Talented Student Advocacy Board. I'm currently working with them to help form a group of high school students from across the nation who are interested in advocating for gifted education. And so it's been a really great experience being able to meet with other high schoolers as well and also start advocating for the issue on our ends, because obviously as high schoolers and as students who've gone through the gifted education program, we have a completely different experience and we also want to voice our opinions and our thoughts. And also I've been able to meet with a lot of people at the NC legislature. I've been able to meet with Representative Greenfield, Miss Elizabeth Yelverton, and so many others to talk about gifted education and to really advocate on student voice in gifted education, especially for identification practices. So that's what I've really been working on with gifted education. And that's something that I really consider very dear and near to my heart.
Wow, that's amazing advocacy work, especially for somebody so young. In your opinion, why do you think there's really not a whole lot of advocacy, especially for gifted education, from the youth?
I think the biggest reason why there isn't a lot of advocacy is because it's not something that a lot of high schoolers think about after they've gone through the program. Because I know that gifted education is supposed to be like K to 12 and students from all these grade levels should be receiving differentiated education, even if they're gifted. But I think once we hit high school, gifted education isn't seen as important or it's not as prevalent. Students who are considered gifted are just encouraged to take more AP classes, more dual enrollment classes. And while more quantity of, like, you know, higher, more rigorous classes are important, I also feel like that differentiated education that you received in elementary school, which was more focused on providing that extra level of critical thinking instead of just going like, oh, here's more knowledge. I feel like that's the gap that we really see in high school. And so because high schoolers aren't, they just don't think about that. They're like, oh yeah, I'm gifted. I was gifted in elementary school, so I'm just going to take more AP classes or more dual enrollment classes, more IB classes. It's not something that strikes them as like, oh, this is something important. This is something that I should consider speaking about. And also the fact that, once again, because we don't talk about it as much, it's not talked about in schools. It's not talked about amongst peers even, right? Because after elementary school, no one really thinks about it. I think that's the reason why there aren't as many student advocates, unless you're really thinking about the issue, which I feel like we aren't advocating for enough.
It's so exciting and so refreshing to hear you talk about gifted education. Trinette and I are very passionate about gifted education. And so we chose this as a career path because we feel like our gifted kids get underserved and they're not talked about enough. And that's really the premise of this whole podcast. You know, it's kind of a tongue-in-cheek title of they'll be fine, because so often they think, well, they're smart, they're gifted, like they'll be fine. Just let them do whatever they want. I love being able to hear your perspective. And I think student voice is super important. Thank you for what you're doing. What would be some recommendations you would make to district leaders with gifted education especially at the middle and high school level? What do you think we could do to make it better and make it more of a thing? Because like you mentioned, after elementary school, sometimes people don't really talk about it or think about it much. What could we do?
Yeah, I think one thing that we should do more in districts would be having student advocates or like a student advisory board in their district for advanced learning services. So I know we're starting up one for Wake County. I think all districts should have one because students definitely want to voice their opinions, but advanced learning services, I feel like it gets that connotation like, oh, you know, this is just for kids who are really, really smart. And maybe it's not as prioritized. Maybe they think, oh, it's for the smart kids. They'll be fine. Once again, like you said, they'll be fine, right? It's just not as prominent. It just needs a space to be voiced out. So I think districts should start some sort of small gifted advocacy advisory board and have a few middle schooler and high school students come in and maybe speak with them once a month about their opinions on the services that they've been provided and what they could do better, because individual districts have individual needs. And I feel like the people who speak to them best would be the students themselves. And I feel like that's something we should really, really consider across all districts. And then for differentiated education in middle school and high school, honestly, I feel like one of the best models that I got would be through the project I mentioned in the very, very beginning of this podcast when I talked about my AP Lang teacher doing the semester-long project. If I hadn't done that project, I would have not like even thought about gifted education. I wouldn't have thought about this at all, and or even like done so much with it and been able to interact with so many amazing people in the gifted education space. I think that it's really important that we move away from solely testing students to assess their intelligence and be like, oh, if they can get a 5 on the AP exam, if they can get an A in the class, right? Instead of coming from that mindset, trying to switch to a mindset where it's more group activities and really harnessing critical thinking skills, because I feel like that's what we're lacking the most in schools, especially high school students and especially gifted students. Because once again, when you're told to take more AP classes and dual enrollment classes, and I feel like I've fallen down this rabbit hole as well. It's just like, oh, I need to get 100 on the next test. I need to study all the content and not think about it after that. I feel like if we really focused away from that sort of perfection mindset and going more into the let's think about what we're learning and how we can apply it and really have students think about it more, I feel like that would be perfect for students who are gifted in high school. So some sort of like research program or like a semester long project or some sort of way for gifted students to really think deeper, because I feel like that would be a great way for them to explore things that they don't normally get to do in their regular classes and also receive like a differentiated education. So obviously this is just like an idea, but I think this would be a great way. I know it helped me a lot, and I'm sure it would help other gifted students, because when we attach something with a grade, it makes it so much harder to actually think about it and be critical and all that sort of good stuff. So in my opinion, those are two amazing things that we could do to really help students in middle school and high school receive that differentiated education.
I think a lot of students feel like when they're passionate about something, they don't know how to turn that into action, or they feel like, oh, I'm just a kid. What can I do? I'm not going to be able to really make a difference. But it's clear that you've taken this passion that you've developed and you've turned it into action through working with the YAPA Kids organization. Can you tell us a little bit about that organization and how you got involved with them?
YAPA Kids is a nonprofit that is dedicated to inspiring academic curiosity in students from grades 1 to 8 from all across the world. So what we do, we have 30-minute online lessons for students in subjects from math to science to reading, social studies, history, so many, and I'll talk more about that later. We have these classes for students, and they can join in their respective time zones from the comfort of their own home. And the people teaching these lessons are high school students from all across the world, but mostly from America. What we strive to do is not to tutor students or be like, okay, here are homework problems that you struggled with, here's how to answer them. That's not what our goal is. What we want to do with our organization is to really have students, once again, think critically, answer their questions. If there's something they really, really want to know, learn more about, or know, it's a place for them to ask questions freely without worrying about a test grade or worrying about a score or worrying about what others think of them. It's really a program for them to be able to do what they might not be able to do in school. I joined the program as a freshman in high school. I needed a few volunteer hours for a school requirement. And so I found the organization. I started volunteering there 30 minutes a week. And when I first started volunteering, I was teaching science to 3 kids in grades 3 to 5. And so on my first day of teaching, I honestly was not a great teacher. And I read about this on my Common App, too. I would stutter through my words. I would skip through slides. I was a mess in the first 2 weeks. I remember I just wasn't a great teacher. I think it came around to the 4th week, and I had one student who would consistently show up to every single class, even though I was a really, really bad teacher back then. He showed up to every class. And I remember in the first week, I mentioned something about plasma, but I mentioned it like it was just a side comment that I made, and I kept going. And then the 4th week, I had one of my students. He asked me, "Anne Mary, what's plasma?" And I was shocked because by then we were talking about like the ecosystem and stuff. And I'm like, what made you think of that? And he's like, no, you mentioned in the first week, but you never really fully explained it. And I thought it was interesting and I want to learn more. And I was completely taken aback because at that point, no one had asked me a single question. Every time I'd stop after a slide, I'd be like, anyone have any questions? No one had asked me anything. So I was so surprised and shocked. And I started to, normally I would just click through slides that I had made before the class on a topic that I thought was interesting for them. And I just go through the slides. But then I got out like a Google Jamboard and I started like drawing out stuff. And I'm like, so here are the 3 states of matter and then plasmas. And I started talking about it. And then he had more and more questions. And I remember that some of the questions got pretty extreme. He's like, can we drink plasma? Can we eat plasma? Can we touch plasma? It was so funny. And it was so interesting just to see that, like, to visibly see curiosity. I think that was like one of the first times that I've like actually seen a kid be so curious. And it was super inspiring to me because if I hadn't answered his question with the same level of intensity that he had asked it to me, I don't think I would have been able to see that. And so I think that really shifted my mind in how I teach students. Because after that, I started to solely focus. I'd start every question with a blank Google Jamboard instead of having slides. Start with a blank Google Jamboard and be like, what are your questions? Or here's a topic that I have. Here's a little introduction. What are your questions? Let's see what we can do with it. It's honestly been an amazing experience working with the organization and teaching the students. And so I did that for around a year. I just teach students and I loved it. But I remember in one of the chemistry classes that I taught, I had a student who came up to me and he asked me, hey, Anne Mary, I love Yapa Kids. I love it so much. But I feel like I learn more at our 30-minute weekly classes than I do in my science class at school. And I feel like that was really the moment when not the teaching click, but I think that's when I realized I need to make a change. Like, there's so many kids out there who might have things that they want to learn and they want to do, but they aren't given the opportunity to do so. I started applying for like leadership positions in the organization. I'm like, I need to make a change because by the time that I was a freshman and by the time I reached like sophomore year, the organization was floundering. We had like 50 students max. 10 active volunteers at max. Once again, it was not a great time for our organization. And so I joined as an operations director, working with the programs, working with the teachers, and eventually I became the organization's president. And at that point, it was my junior year, and the person who founded the organization was telling me that we should shut it down. And they're like, you know, there isn't much hope left for it. But I kept thinking about the moments of curiosity that I was able to witness in my students, and I really wanted to keep the organization going. And so we worked really, really hard the summer of my junior year to bring back the organization, and we got over 250 signups, I think, that first fall that we ran again. And it was amazing, and it just kept growing and growing. We had our very first summer camp this year with over 300 signups, and we've had so many volunteers start volunteering again, and we have It's a great community, and I'm super, super proud of how far we've come and how many students we've been able to help, because we have homeschool students from Philadelphia all the way to, I had a student in Taiwan who would wake up at 6 a.m. for our classes. And recently we even had a refugee student from Afghanistan who has joined us to help support his learning in mathematics and English. And so it's been an amazing organization that I've had the privilege to be a part of and work with for the last three and a half years now. And sadly, I do have to hand over the organization because we like to keep it as a high school nonprofit. And as a senior now, I'm finding new people to become the president and all the leadership roles. So it is a little sad to see to leave the organization soon, but I'm still super proud of where we have come and what we've been able to do. And I really hope that in college, I'm able to be a part of a similar sort of program.
I'm smiling because I think you so beautifully articulated all the reasons why we became educators in the first place. It's seeing those sparks of curiosity in children and really wanting to fan those flames and turn it into full-fledged fires, which it sounds like you were able to do through that organization and inspire so many kids to follow their curiosity and see what that could turn into. You mentioned that you offered a bunch of different courses. How do you decide as an organization what courses that you're going to offer to your students?
I think on our website, it says 25 programs. I do need to update that. We've actually shortened it to 12 programs recently. So we decide our topics to offer based on, once again, interest of the students, because sometimes students really want to learn a certain topic. So within our science program, we have a general science program. And then for middle schoolers, we offer chemistry, biology, environmental science, and physics. And like the environmental science program came about because one of the teachers was really passionate about environmental science and wanted to teach it. So we started the environmental science program. We also are planning on starting a chess program because we have a teacher who's really, really interested in starting a chess program. We also started like a dance and a singing and a whole performing arts branch. Once again, based on student and teacher interest. So we decide the courses to offer based on student and teacher interest. And we also remove some courses if students aren't as receptive to it. So we had, I think, iOS development up for a year, but no one was really signing up for that. So we just kept it down to Python for our programming languages. So it's mostly based on student interest and teacher availability.
That is very cool. What keeps your team motivated and connected, especially since many are high school students teaching classes? How do you keep that enthusiasm level and commitment up?
I feel like, once again, I've been a part of the organization for around 3.5 years now, and I've been able to make some amazing friends from across the country through this organization. And I feel like one of the reasons why I was so motivated initially and to keep going, especially when people told me the organization wasn't going to survive or wasn't going to thrive after a bit, was my team. My team, they're an amazing group of people, the executive team that we have. And I feel like what keeps us all motivated, once again, is just seeing our students and being able to talk to them. We'll often have conversations about our students and, you know, what they've told us. I know recently we were talking about how one of the students, I had a student, she would love to use the little filters on Google Meet. And so I was telling them, like, you know, it's so funny. She's just like, I know when my teachers tell me, oh, you guys know more about technology than us. I was like, it's kind of like that moment for me with my student, because I didn't know that there were filters on Google Meet. That was just a Zoom thing. So, you know, just funny moments like that. And also, like, we're high schoolers as well. Sometimes we'll, like, do random, like, homework sessions on our Discord calls. Or we'll talk for, like, I remember one time we talked for, like, 2 hours straight. Not even about Yapa Kids, just, like, random stuff. So it's just really nice because I think we're all high schoolers. We're kind of all going through the same thing. We're all going through college apps and, you know, AP testing. We'll do this thing in our organization. We shut down during AP testing weeks because everyone's really busy. And what we'll do is that we'll, like, sometimes call amongst ourselves and we'll be like, anyone needs help with AP bio? Anne Marie took it, or X person took it and they can help you with it. Or I know I was really struggling with a push in one point in time. And so I actually asked some of the people in my organization if they had taken the subject too. So it's like, it's a great community. And I think it's just the fact that we're all high schoolers and we all have like, I think all of us are really passionate about the respective topics that we teach. I'm really passionate about science and business and law. That's like my really like, I love that sort of sector. And there's people who love writing and people who love math. And I feel like even though we all have different interests, it's, I think it's our passions for the topics that we teach that really make us connected and committed at our organization. So yeah.
It sounds like you have made Yapa Kids just this amazing community, this amazing group. Our podcast audience is pretty diverse. We have teachers listening, but we also have parents, and we're hoping to have more and more students listen too. So I wouldn't be surprised if this episode inspires other kids to do something similar. What advice would you give for someone wanting to start like a supplemental educational organization for students like Yapa Kids? What would you tell them?
I think the biggest thing about starting or working with an organization for supplemental education, the biggest thing is commitment and commitment, because it's pretty easy to start something and then not do it after that. So I think what happens with a lot of different like student nonprofits and student groups that people start is that they'll start the Instagram page, they'll make a website, they'll start a few things. And then after that, it kind of just goes down. I feel like you have to be able to come back to it day in and day out, even when you don't feel like it. I know there have been days where I'm like, oh, I really don't want to join the executive meeting, or no, I really don't want to like have to look through my emails and answer emails. But I feel like it's really just coming back to it day in and day out that really allows people to make successful organizations and be able to really follow their passions when it comes to nonprofits and similar ventures.
So I know you're getting ready to go to college and you're going to be rolling off of Yapa Kids, but what are your hopes for the organization? Like, where do you want to see it go and continue?
So right now we're an online nonprofit, and it's mostly because we have students from across the world and we want to accommodate for them. But I really want to start more in-person chapters because I really love to work with kids face-to-face. I worked at a summer camp one summer and I really love my experience there. And so I really want more in-person workshops or weekly lessons at like a library or a community rec center. I think that should be a really great way to engage students. And I think it's just been really, really cool and really fun to see. And that's something I really, really want to see from the organization and I want to see from our members. So that's something I really want to start up this year. I'm not sure how far we'll get with that. We are trying to contact a few libraries in the area and see where we get with that. But if I'm not able to do it, I really hope the next president and the rest of the organization can do that in the near future.
I was really impressed and surprised that it's an international organization. We think in North Carolina, we're very fortunate because we have legislation that protects gifted education. And even with that, you're seeing the gaps, right? Which is why this is addressing some of those gaps for kids. But working internationally, I know you said that's really interesting because you've met friends from all over the world, but how would you or how do you address cultural, linguistic, or curricular differences across regions and countries?
I had one student from Taiwan who would, like I said, wake up at 6 a.m. for the lessons because I couldn't do mornings. School starts really early out here. And so I wasn't able to do my mornings for him. And so I would always have to do it in the afternoons after I got back from school. So I think one of the biggest differences that I noticed was, once again, there are definitely cultural differences, but I think the way that I've handled these different cultural differences, I know my student was, compared to my students from America, he was really, really committed to learning and he would actually take notes and stuff during class. And so I know he really valued a more structured classroom. And so I feel like he was one of the students who really loved the slides and all of that sort of stuff, right? My other students weren't a fan of slides. They hated my slides. But I think he really liked the slides and like note taking. And so that was one thing that I tried to do with my student just from Taiwan, because I really think that he appreciated it and that's something he wanted to see. But also just across from students, even within America, there's so many differences. I've had homeschool students and students from, you know, different parts of America and time zones as well. So that's a whole thing. But I think one of my most memorable experiences, not memorable, but one of my most, not interesting, once again, I'm not sure how to describe it, but I did have a student who was autistic and had ADHD. And the other students in the class, they were all third graders. And I don't think they understood that. And I didn't want to put that student on the spot, but they would keep interrupting my class. And they showed a lot of curiosity and passion. I really, really wanted to nurture that. But I also wanted the other students to know that it wasn't like, I know sometimes they would privately text me in the chat box. They'll be like, hey, why is she disrupting the class? I don't like it. But also, so they didn't understand from their end. And I also wanted to make sure all the students had a great time. I would try different learning techniques. So one thing I would try to do is we'd play a game in the beginning of class for 5 minutes, and that would be a great way for the students to get to know each other. And then at the last 10 minutes of class, we'd always do a Kahoot where they would team up. And so that was one way for them to get to know their classmates without directly addressing the issue, because once again, the third graders, they might not be able to understand all that. There are definitely cultural differences across different regions, but I also feel like the more serious ones are the ones within different intelligences and different emotional ranges, because that varies from class to class. And I feel like it's definitely just a lot of communication, especially with the parents as well, because we definitely do talk to the parents. We email them after each class. So just telling them about what we're trying to do to address the issue and asking them for their feedback as well and what they're comfortable with is really important. It's something that we strive to in our organization. So that's one way we address cultural and linguistics and curricular differences across different regions.
That is awesome. I love hearing your stories and I love hearing your passion come through. I feel like you've already accomplished so much. We know you're in your senior year and there's like a lot more to look forward to. What's next for you?
Yeah, right now I am applying to colleges. It's been a stressful process, but I think we're at the tail end of it. So that's pretty nice. Submitted a few of my early actions last week. I'll be submitting a few more this week. I'm trying to stay in state for college, mostly for tuition purposes, but also because we have amazing schools out here. NC State, UNC Chapel Hill, Charlotte, Wilmington are all amazing schools that I'm applying to. I'm hoping to study business or specifically operations and supply chain management, because I really liked when I was like an operations director at YapKids, I really liked working with people and seeing how we could integrate teams and all that sort of work was really interesting to me. And I've looked into supply chain management and I think it looks pretty interesting. But I also really do want to work in the pharmaceutical industry because it's a really interesting industry and it has a lot to offer. And there's always something happening in the pharmaceutical industry. There's always a new drug, new medicine that's being made. So I think it's really interesting. And I also do research in corporate venture capitals in the pharmaceutical industry, just seeing if kind of from the outside, it's super cool to analyze it. So it'd be really great to work in it. That's what I plan to do career-wise in college. Probably would change. I know I definitely am not fixated on one thing, and I'm trying to go into college with an open mindset because so many different options, and I definitely want to think through my decision. And I also keep coming back to doing something in gifted education. I really love what I'm doing right now, and working with students and gifted education and all this sort of stuff is really, really interesting to me. I know I'd definitely be volunteering in college, working with elementary schoolers, middle schoolers, and high schoolers, something I definitely want to keep continuing post high school. Not sure career-wise, but I definitely want to do something with this passion that I have. So not sure what it is. Maybe I'll minor in education or public policy or something along those lines, but I'll definitely be doing something in this realm in college.
The sky's the limit for you, honestly, and it's awesome to have so many interests. So I just want to encourage you to explore And like you said, you don't have to make that decision right now, but there's so many great opportunities. I mean, I just see endless potential in you, Anne Mary. How can people learn more about Yapa Kids, or how could they enroll?
Yes. So if they go to our website, www.yapakids.org, on the front, like when you go onto the website, the first thing you'll see is three buttons, and one of them says apply to teach, one of them says learn about our programs, and one of them says sign up. And so if they click the sign up button, they'll be directed to a Google form and they can sign up for as many programs as they want to for their kid.
That is great. We know you're busy, and we really appreciate you taking time out of your schedule to chat with us and be part of this podcast. It's just been incredible, and you are such an inspiration. I definitely explored your website before the podcast, but just hearing you talk about it just brings it to life in a different way. And again, your passion and your enthusiasm just shines in everything that you do. So what an honor it was to connect with you and chat with you this afternoon, Anne Mary. Thank you.
Of course, thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely.
Well, nice to meet you. We said we're both going to donate to your organization because we saw that it uses donation funding to run. And so we just want to support what you're doing because we think it's really important. And we'd love to have you on the team someday. If you enjoyed today's episode, please help us grow our community by sharing this episode with a friend, colleague, and on your social media platforms.
And don't forget to subscribe and follow us on Instagram at They'll Be Fine.
NCAGT provides you with resources like this podcast. Please find us on social media or visit our website at ncagt.org to learn more.
Please note, the thoughts and ideas shared in this podcast are as diverse as our guests, not always reflecting the official NCAGT stance. Until next time, stay curious and keep learning, because we can't just hope they'll be fine.